Hey there, guys. This is Super Ty. I'm drinking with my buddy Chris, and we are going to be talking about some comics for Taiwan On. If this is your first time ever hearing this, it's basically we just sit around, have some beers or whatever cocktails we want, and just chit-chat about comics. So, Chris, how are you doing?
I'm good, man.
Excellent. We have some people singing behind us. It's pretty awesome.
Singing and dancing.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm missing the dancing.
You're not missing a thing.
I don't want to look too conspicuous. So, Chris, tell me, man, like, what do you do?
Well, I guess the short answer is I actually run a creative marketing agency.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So, do you, like, do more visual stuff? Do you do, like, what
does
that
entail? My background's a writer.
Okay.
My background's a writer. So, I started out as an ad copywriter, and I run, like, a small firm now that we do visual stuff. We do design stuff. Probably the most notable thing, or I guess the most relevant thing for this conversation, was when Netflix was coming out with the Daredevil show.
Right.
I was working for an online publication called The Daily Dot at the time.
Okay.
And I got to work on a pitch deck for the Daredevil show.
Oh, nice.
Where it was just all this, like, comics content that we're going to try to get them to sponsor. And so I was doing pitches for, like, documentaries and the different creative teams over the years and things like that. And so it was kind of fun to be able to have the work and the personal interest kind of align there.
I gotcha. Nice. That is very badass. So talk to me about comics, man. What got you in? Do you remember your first comic?
I do, actually. It was the first comic that I bought.
Okay.
Probably not the first comic that I read. But there was a convenience store around the corner from my grandparents' house that I was, I don't know, maybe second grade, something like that. And they had the little spinner racks. And G.I. Joe had just come out. And this was, I don't know, maybe 81, 82, 83, something like that. And so I got G.I. Joe number one from the little spinner rack at the convenience store. Yeah. And if I think if memory serves, it was like an ice-based type of cover or something. But yeah, that was kind of the first thing. Was I think it cost me 60 cents at the time.
I miss those days.
It was a princely sum. And I just kind of got hooked, you know. And I mean, that was, like I said, probably, I don't know, first, second grade, something around there. And so I read a lot of licensed stuff, like, when I was young, like
Transformers,
G.I. Joe and Transformers,
you know,
all of that stuff. And but that was really the first thing, was probably the G.I. Joe number one. I remember having a Shazam t-shirt when I was a kid.
Nice.
And it was like a thermal long sleeve tee, and I would wear it in the summer, it'd be like 90 degrees, and I just wanted to wear this Shazam shirt. So at some point, I must have read, like, a Shazam comic to know who he was.
Yeah.
But yeah, G.I. Joe was the first one that I can remember actually paying cash for.
Oh, okay. Cool. So, in the current comic climate, I did not mean to make that so alliterative. what are you digging right now? What do you like to read? What are your, like, top of the pile, I have to read this before anything else happens book?
Yeah, you know, I think it changes, like, every couple of months.
Well, I mean, just right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now, honestly, Deadly Class, I think is, like, I fished that out of the pile first, just because the final storyline was so great. I'm not going to spoil anything about it, but it was kind of a slow build. This comic, for those that haven't read it, it's basically about a preparatory school for
assassins. Yeah.
It's like, imagine, like, Professor X school for gifted, you know, youngsters, but essentially like hitmen. And the finals week was really cool. And I just kind of got sucked into it. And it's been interesting, like, the second kind of cycle of the book, like year two, like the sophomore year, it's mostly new characters. They've kind of reset the clock, and it's been really interesting to kind of see what's going to come back in from the freshman year, and then what's going to happen with these new characters in the sophomore year. And I have to say, it's a credit to the creative team that I'm as hooked as I was, because I don't really have allegiances to a lot of the characters that are featured in this sophomore year.
Okay.
But I'm kind of interested to see where they're going to take it. And so I'm kind of, you know, that's kind of top of the pile, got to read it. That's probably, you know, for at least, like, the creator-owned, that's the book right now.
Okay.
I think on more of, like, the mainstream stuff, probably the Miles Morales Spider-Man ranks
pretty high.
That's
a really good book right now.
That's really good. Even Champions.
Like, dude, Champions, God, this is going to sound so stupid. I've been championing that book at work because it's the most comic book comic I've read in forever, where it's just like, superheroes, we're going to save the day. We're not going to have that inner turmoil or I don't trust my teammates stuff. It's like fun new characters that are, if you notice, they're all like reinterpretations of older characters. So like, you know, of course there's young Cyclops, but I mean, young Nova, the different Miss Marvel, the new Hulk, the Miles Morales Spider-Man all in it.
And you've got Viv Vision too.
Oh God, Viv Vision. I'm just waiting for that bomb to explode.
Talk about alliteration though.
Yeah.
Vision. That's going to trip us up the longer this goes on.
So, but also you mentioned Deadly Class. That is one book I could not get into.
Really?
Yeah, I tried and I don't know, maybe I just didn't give it enough issues to give a shot. Usually I give a first story arc, but I just couldn't even get through the first two issues.
It
I don't know why.
It was a slow burn. It was a slow burn. It took a while to get going, and I really have to say, I think because he was world building, and he was kind of establishing the backstories to the characters, and I'd say probably, maybe not even to like the second or third arc, that things really kind of grabbed me. Like it was, you know, it was one of those books that was like, yeah, it was a nice to read. I really liked Wes Craig's art. Like, Wes Craig's panel
work. His art's great. His art's great. I'm not discounting that.
You know, the story took me a little bit to kind of get into, but, man, I have to say, like, either, like, the back half of the second arc, kind of the heading into the finals arc, it just kind of reeled me in, and I've kind of stayed hooked since okay. then. But, yeah, it was one of those things, and, you know, there's a lot of, like, Remender books that I read, and some of them I've actually, my interest has waned. Like, I thought Black Science started really strongly, and
right.
I liked that book. And I kind of feel like it's been wandering in the wilderness a little bit. And
well, like, Black Science, well, first I gotta say that Rick Remender is a genius on picking his artists.
Yes.
And, like, it's, for some reason, like, all these amazing artists, are, like, they're just, they'll jump on whatever he's doing. Like, Sean Murphy doing Tokyo Ghost was great. I can't remember the, darn it, what's his name, that does Black Science?
Oh, it's the Italian guy. What is it?
Caselli?
Matteo? No, is
no.
it, oh, this is going to bug me, too.
It's all right. We'll get
yeah,
to it later.
But,
and
yeah.
Toccini from, you know, Low?
Yeah.
Did you ever read the book that they did before that?
No, it's actually been on my list to go back and check out.
It's really good. That's how I got into Rick Remender, The Last Days of American Crime, and, like, it's a crime book, but it's also a future sci-fi book as well. It was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, you know, it's like a lot of his stuff I've enjoyed. Deadly Class was a little bit slower to get started. Some books, like Black Science, it felt like really started strong.
Right.
And it's kind of just kind of, I don't know, it's maybe in a little bit of a lull. But, you know, Low has been consistently, you
7
know,
to Eternity is another great
yeah.
one. I'm sorry, I didn't mean
yeah,
to interrupt,
yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
Opeño's art in that book, good God.
Yeah, amazing.
It's gorgeous. I think that's my favorite by Remender Ryan.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's that was kind of one of the ones where as much as I like the art, I couldn't really get into the first couple of issues of that.
I got you.
I don't know if it was just so tonally different from anything he's done lately that maybe it just was a little bit
well,
it's strange.
It's like you said with Deadly Class, there's a lot of world building. Like, there's a lot of, these are the characters, these are the rules. And, like, issue 4 is when the story really starts.
Gets going.
All
right,
yeah.
Well, trade so, comes out, I'll have to go pick up
oh,
the trade
yeah, of course.
And kind of get back into it. Yeah, but, I mean, it's I can see what you're saying about Deadly Class just because took a while.
It took a while. Now, I'm sorry, and we got way off track. What other books are you really into? You said Deadly Class, you said Champions, Miles
yeah.
Morales, Spider-Man.
You know what's funny? It's I think on like the creator-owned side, you've got me into a lot of the... yeah, I caught that too.
Yeah.
You know, the Donny Cates books, like Paybacks.
Paybacks is so good.
Was great. It was sad to see that end. I picked up God Country, but I haven't read that yet. But
it's really good. It's very preacher. Very,
oh, really?
Very West Texas mythos kind
so
of
So that's
going
to be good then.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's, like, Paybacks, like, both runs of that, like, I really enjoyed.
Did you ever read Buzzkill?
No, you know, you actually recommended that to
I
me.
Tell you
and
about
I've
it.
Got it. I've got it on my list. I have, like, a list on my phone of older series that you have recommended to
oh,
me.
Oh, man.
Eventually, I will get to kind of pick up the trades and all of those.
Well, I won't harp too long on it.
It's, I, you know, I like that creative team.
Jeff Shaw and Donnie Cates, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a really strong creative team. But that was a book that I was really into when they were publishing that.
Now, without spoilers, really quick, when you find out who the driver is, did you know who the driver was?
Yes.
Dude, I was like, no way were they allowed to do this. And Donnie's a local guy, and so I talked to him about that. I was just like, dude, how did you get that? He was like, shh. Let's not talk too much about it.
I guess one of the advantages of low readership is the fact that you can kind of pull a couple fast ones. And
but I thought that was a great twist.
Yeah, no, I was not expecting that.
See, I thought the driver... Well, no, wait. We're getting way too much into spoiler territory, which is one thing we don't do at Taiwan.
Maybe that's a separate program.
Yeah, that's a conversation when we pause. So you're digging Donnie Cates and Jeff Shaw's works. Anything else that you're like, just, oh my God, this is the best thing ever?
You know, it's this is more of a general statement, which may actually carry into another tangent. But, you know, honestly,
tangent
lately,
away.
A lot of the Marvel stuff that I've been reading, I've hated the team books.
Okay.
And I really liked the individual
like
books.
Solo series.
Yeah, the solo series. And so Vision, I mean, that just wrapped, but... Vision was a
best thing I've read in like five
years.
Yeah,
I mean that was great.
I reread it this weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Good God.
Did you pick up anything you didn't catch the first time around?
Just little things like in the beginning narrative. I was like, oh, this really comes into play later.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
And you know, and that's interesting because that book was almost all narration.
Like, yeah,
probably like.
There wasn't a lot. Yeah, I never
even
picked up on that.
I mean, it was a lot of narration, which I thought was interesting as a writer. You know, not that I'm doing that, but every writer has like the half finished novel or whatever like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And you know, I've always struggled when I've done like creative writing with dialogue. My creative writing stuff ends up being a lot of narration. And so that may have been one of the reasons why Vision from a story side really appealed to me was that Tom King did so much on the narrative kind of side. In some really interesting ways, like,
yeah.
You know, just some kind of interesting literature nods.
The whole Shakespeare subthread with
like very
Ben.
Writerly stuff,
yeah.
You know, and then was it Walta did that, right?
I'm sorry?
Walta did the art for that book?
Oh, man, you're putting me on the spot. I don't know.
Anyway, the art was great. The art was great.
Mike Del Mundo did most of the covers for it.
Which is fantastic.
He's one of my favorite artists.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was actually excited when he took over the Avengers book.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just the fact to see him do actual pages and not just covers. Which I guess that's kind of the other exception. Like, that's been interesting so far with the whole Kang thing. But
yeah.
I may just be into it just because of the art.
And, you know, honestly, that's been happening to me more and more. It was just like, this art is gorgeous, and I'm kind of like, okay, the story's there, but I'm really looking at beautiful colored pictures.
I think that's the team book that gets a pass from me, just because of the art is so strong.
Well, and I do agree with you. Like, a lot of the team books are kind of like, all right, let's get this going, guys. But, like, all the street-level heroes...
Yeah.
Like the Power Man and Iron Fist book, I think it was
that's a great
fantastic.
Book.
The Daredevil book, I think it's been good. The Moon Knight book's been blowing me away. I'm kind of worried that they forgot how to write for teams. It almost seems like they're writing for, like, this story plot could be a movie later, kind of.
Yeah, it's got kind of that broad strokes, kind of script treatment, kind of vibe to it. You know, it's like I go back and forth about the X books. Like, do I give up on them?
Well, you know what's coming up with those, right?
The
resurrection stuff?
No, I mean, I actually kind of have been resistant to go into the X versus Inhumans. And so I haven't even looked beyond that. So what's up with
the resurrection stuff? It's going to be they're bringing back X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue.
Oh, interesting.
They're bringing back Generation X.
Wow.
But... the Generation X book is the one I'm most excited about because it's not like, you know, the original characters. It's like all the mutants that don't have the really awesome powers. It's a team led by Jubilee. But when you think about it, Jubilee is just kind of like, okay, she shoots fireworks out of her hands.
Yeah.
But, like, then it's, I don't know if you read Jason Aaron's run on Wolverine and the X-Men, I-Boy.
Yeah.
I-Boy's going to be in that.
Really?
And it's just all the people whose powers are like, all right. I'm a mutant, yay.
So this will be the book of the whatever happened to characters.
Yeah, exactly. And the X-Men Blue team's going to be the young X-Men from the past.
Okay, all right.
blah. The X-Men Gold Team is going to be like the mainstay characters that are still around, like Storm, Colossus, okay. Kitty Pryde. Kitty Pryde's leading the team. Old Man Logan and somebody else. But there's also going to be an Iceman series, a Jean Grey series. I'm actually looking forward to it because the last 2 years of X-Men books has been very...
It's been whatever. Some dark times if you're an X fan.
Well, I really think that every writer that's working on them, I believe it's Cullen Bunn and Jeff Lemire and Dennis Hopeless, I think. I think Dennis Hopeless is doing
Dennis Hopeless is doing all new X-Men.
I think Marvel was just kind of like, hey, can you guys come up with something for a year and a half until we do this thing?
Yeah, and I kind of get the sense that I don't know what your take on it is, because these are all good writers. I like other books they've done.
Love them. Love them.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Descender and Black Hammer and like those are
Harrow County.
Yeah, Harrow County. I mean, I even like Cullen Bunn's like Magneto run.
That's why I like the Uncanny X-Men series going on right now, because it's a pseudo sequel to it. And I was like, that's the one I'm enjoying
most. That's my favorite. Yeah, that's my favorite of the new X books. But I mean, it's like even Dennis Hopeless, I've liked some of his other, like even he did Young Avengers, right? Did he do that?
No, Dennis I can't remember what Dennis Hopeless did. The people that did Young Avengers was Alan Heinberg did the first run, and then Karen Gillan did the second
one. Okay, I knew he did the second one. I thought Hopeless was on it for a bit. But I read something of his that I liked. So I was really kind of disappointed. Like, my take on the X-Books, it's like the editorial board is saying, here's an event, to your point about
right towards it.
Yeah. Here's an event, and it doesn't seem very organic for what like these guys do on other series and also with their own books.
So, and this leads into a really cool part I like talking about is, what do you not like about comics right now? What are you just hating?
You know, it's a common gripe, so I don't know if it's actually unique.
Gripe away, dude. Gripe away.
I think we're getting, particularly on kind of like the Marvel side, we're getting very crossover heavy.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see it more on the DC side now, too, because I saw there's, like, Suicide Squad,
Justice League.
And now there's, like, Justice League Power Rangers, and Batman, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And,
But that book was really good, though.
Yeah, but I'm just saying there's a lot of those things going on right now, and it's kind of, on the Marvel side, I'm trying to think of the last crossover event that I actually enjoy.
Thinking through, like, I can remember all the crossovers in a row. Civil War was good.
Yeah.
The first one. Okay, so the first Civil War, that's where I start the main crossover. I'm not going back to 1985 Secret Wars. I'll just do modern stuff. Civil War was great. Yeah. It was amazing. It really set the tone for the Marvel Universe for, like, 15 years. Secret Invasion, I thought was done really well. Because, like, that was Brian Bendis at his peak of, like, I have all these little fingers and all these pies, and oops, they're all leading up to this big story. After that, I thought Siege was pretty cool, just because it was short. Yeah. It was 4 issues. It was like, this is the story arc. It's done now. What else? Avengers vs. X-Men, I think, suffered from too many cooks in the kitchen, because it was 4 separate writers. Like, I can't even tell you how many artists were working on it. What else? Fear Itself was fun to look at, but the story didn't really do much.
Yeah.
What else was really going on? There was this police car driving by. Oh, two. I hope they get where they're going safe. What else? There was Original Sin, which I really dug.
And that's a love it or hate it.
That's a love it or hate it. That is exactly right. I've talked to people about it. They're like, I hated that book. And I'm like, it's a murder mystery. I thought it was interesting. Yeah.
But I think, like, most of the ones you've named haven't been the last 5 years. Original Sin, I was
getting up to them.
Okay.
Axis did not like.
No.
It was one of those, or I'm sorry, I totally skipped Age of Ultron. Age of Ultron was the worst thing I've read in forever, because it was like, world-changing events! Time travel! Nope, never mind. Everything's fine. and then, I'm sorry, I'm hogging the conversation. Anyways, I think Secret Wars, the Hickman run of Secret Wars, was fantastic.
Yeah, and I really liked that And I think that probably has, that and Original Sin have been the two that I've liked.
Those have been two really great ones.
But I just feel like Marvel, especially, the Inhumans arc, I can't really get into.
They're really shoving it in people's faces, aren't they? Wow, two more police cars. Okay.
Something's going down.
Something's going down in South Austin. Glad it's not here. But yeah, it's just that whole thing of, I'm so tired of people saying, and nothing will ever be the same again.
Yeah.
They say it for every damn thing. Like, I think they even said it for Monsters Unleashed, which just started. And don't get me wrong, I read Monsters Unleashed. I thought it was a hoot, because I love the old Marvel monster books. But like, come on, seriously? Nothing will ever be the same again for that, too?
Again.
And I'm just like, no, I'm good, guys. You know, like, I think, I'm sorry, I'm taking way too much of the conversation.
No, but I mean, I think we're kind of on the same page, though, is that the signal-to-noise ratio with these crossover events is pretty skewed. And, you know, it's like, you know, obviously, you generally have your big summer crossover, but now we have fall crossovers and winter crossovers.
It has been, 3 weeks since Civil War II ended, and now we're already in the next crossover is Monster Unleashed.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know. I mean, Civil War II, I just couldn't.
Without giving away any spoilers, I was very let down by the story. I think David Marquez's art was solid throughout the entire thing. It was great art. But the story itself was the most Deus Ex Machina, like, ending I have ever read. Like, not spoiling. But seriously, I was just like, come on, guys, at least make it matter. We lost War Machine over this. We lost the original Incredible Hulk over this. Like, let's actually do something.
Yes.
Okay, so what else are you not really digging about comics?
Publishing schedules.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, do they still even do Bitch Planet anymore? I mean, we've talked about this, like, in the store, but.
Okay, so from what I hear, Kelly Sue DeConnick, who's married to Matt Fraction, which is the writer of another series that's notoriously
Sex Criminals.
Apparently, they've been working for the past, like, 8 months on this huge TV deal.
Yes.
And, good, cool, I'm all about that, but, damn it. I mean, Bitch Planet was one of my favorite books.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really strong start.
But then it fell into this trap, which happens a lot for me, which is, I can't get emotionally or, like, intellectually invested in something if I don't know when it's going to end.
Well, the other thing for me
is, I've got burned way too many times before.
When you've got 5 or 6 months between issues, it's like, what happened in the previous issue?
Yeah,
like,
I don't remember.
I have to go back to, like, Wikipedia or something and, like, look up and see, like, what was in issue 5. Because there was a 6 month interval between 5 and 6 or whatever. And it's, Sex Criminals is another great example of that.
I read the third story arc. I have no idea what happened in that. I totally forgot everything.
Well, and I remember the time that I was reading it, I don't know, it kind of lacked the pizzazz of the earlier books in the run, and you could tell that, like, he and Chip were pulled in other directions with
Been doing amazing stuff.
Yeah. Like, but you can kind of tell that they both had other things cooking. I mean, Chip's at least doing, you know,
he did Howard the Duck and Captera.
Yeah.
Now he's doing the Star-Lord book, which is actually really awesome.
Which I've heard good things about.
It's actually really great.
You know, and then it's, I don't know, I just, the idea of Afterlife with Archie has been interesting. From just taking those characters and standing them on their head. But that's another book.
It's been stuck on issue, what, 9?
9. And I think there's been one issue that's come out in the last calendar year.
Yeah, well, here puts it in perspective. Sex Criminals, which was a book I really loved.
Yeah.
The first issue came out when I was still living in Philadelphia 3 years ago. It is on issue 13.
Yeah.
So that's 3 years. Mm-hmm. That blows my mind. And I've talked to some people that are actually in the industry. Yeah. Like, you know, I did a podcast with Cully, and he was like, look, man, sometimes you got to take other gigs to make more money to do the thing you love. And I get that. But I'm going to be stereotypical comic guy. I'm like, darn it, give me the thing I want now because I'm spoiled. Although, we got to admit, there's a renaissance of comics going on now.
Yeah.
You can always find something good.
I think there's a fine line between being a patient fan and being a neglected fan. And I think...
You're the first person to bring this up. Go for it.
So, I mean, I just, you know, I think if the team made kind of an announcement and said, hey, look, you know what, we've got other projects going on, or we're just missing deadlines, and so we're gonna backlog a couple of books, and so we can do an arc without interruption. When creator teams have done that, I've been cool with it, because, you know, you've got the carrot on the end of the stick. But I think when you've got some of these books that they've just stopped producing, and there's really no indication of when they're going to get back to, you know, releasing the issues, that gets frustrating, particularly when you've got a ton of...
Let's just hang on half a second while this gentleman who's honking his horn and screaming at somebody... I need to stop doing these at bars. Although, the beer is delicious. You know what? Let's pick this up in half a second. We're going to break, and then we're going to go to round two. And, like, do you remember where you let off?
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. We might recap. Who knows? But we're going to pause, and we're going to go for round two in just a second. Let me just get my phone back to where it needs to go, and we'll be back in just a minute. Okay, so we're back with round two. We've been talking about patient fans versus neglected fans. And do you remember where you left off?
Yeah, so I think we were talking about, Sex Criminals, Bitch Planet.
Right.
Those titles. Southern Bastards is another one that's been a little spotty lately.
Right.
And I think Jason Aaron, has he been the delay there? Like, I think he's been the one kind of...
It's been coming out, he's doing so many things.
Plus, I wonder if he's just maybe overextended.
His regular books that he's writing, like the Thor books, those have been coming out on time. But I think because Marvel's a little more, you have to be on the schedule, while Image is like, yeah, whatever, dude.
Well, he started another Image book as well, and I'm not reading that one, but it was the...
The Goddamned?
Yeah, The Goddamned.
Dude, that book's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
It was one of those things where I figured I'd probably pick it up in a trade. Like,
it came out this week.
It's out already?
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and get that. I mean, I love his stuff, but it's just, it's just, there's so many titles that I've really gotten into that have just been very kind of...
That fizzle out.
That fizzle out, or kind of uncertain futures.
Yeah.
And not that this is planned, but Nowhere Men.
Norman, the little kid slasher?
No, was it Nowhere Men? What was
Nowhere
the...
Men?
Yeah.
Well, there was something that was going on.
There was something that was going on there, but that thing coming back, the resurrection of that book, it was like, whoa.
See, I had a book like that too. It was called Danger Club. It was an Image book, and I was so mad because I was loving every second of it. And I looked up, I noticed, it was like 8 months since an issue passed, so I went on their Facebook page and I found out their colorist, who does an amazing job. Like, it was like one of those trio teams, not duo teams. And I found out his kids got hit by a car, and they were all waiting for them to get out of rehab so they could get him back. And I was like, okay, fair. I'm cool with that.
Well, and there was obviously extenuating circumstances with Nowhere Men and, what happened with that creative team.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't know, it's just been, it's rough, because a lot of the creator-owned stuff that I really love has been very sporadic lately. And there's some books like Bitch Planet that I'm kind of at the point that when it comes back, I don't know if I'm going to necessarily pick it back up again.
Well, and this is a problem, I think, that happens with Image, is there's really no sense of accountability. Like, with the big two publishers, it's just like, no, there's a Batman book that comes out every month.
Yeah, I mean, the trains are going to run on time.
Yeah. And, oh, there is an Avengers book that will happen this month. And then it's just like, oh, Nowhere Man, because it's on another delay. I can't even tell you the last time an issue came out.
No.
Yeah. I don't know. So that's two things that we're not really big fans of in the comic industry. Do you have anything else?
The DC Cinematic Universe.
We can talk about that. We talk about movies. That's fine. Even though we've hit this up on different podcasts, I love getting other people's opinions. So, what are you not liking?
I like dark stories. Like, some of my favorite novels are dark stories. Like, Cormac McCarthy, for instance.
Dude, he's dark.
One of my favorite writers. And so I don't mind dark stories, particularly when they're well told. But there's, there just seems to be kind of this heaviness there that I don't know if it necessarily fits.
Right.
And I think also because it's been like this corporate synergistic marketing opportunity that it's also kind of, even in the early days, collapsing under its own weight. And
yeah.
You know, it's like I was going to give like Batman vs. Superman like the benefit of the doubt. I didn't love Man of Steel, like the third act of Man of Steel.
Oh, with the with a drum and bass machine at the end,
oh,
you know?
God, yeah.
Wow.
And then there was Batman vs. Superman, and then the travesty that was Suicide Squad, which was never a good idea.
I watched that again recently, and
was it better the second time?
I looked at it with a different set of eyes. My eyes when I saw it the first time was like, okay, comic book movie, here we go. And I just looked at it as like, hey, cool, explosions, action movie. It doesn't really matter, you know? And when I looked at it that way, and I also saw, like, the director's cut, which had, like, you know, an extra whatever amount of minutes, and I was like, oh, the characters I really dug in that movie have more of a voice in this
one. Well, so, because I haven't seen the director's cut, so let me ask you, because this is, like, kind of the question as I was watching it in the theater. Is the director's cut resequenced at all?
Not really. It just adds to scenes. Okay. Like, you get more Captain Boomerang, which I thought was a great part of the movie. I loved
Captain
Boomerang.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, there were some characters in there that were just barely there.
Yeah, or like, God, when, what was it, Shiva, is that her name? The girl with the sword?
Oh, yeah.
Katana.
Katana.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, how do we miss that one?
Yeah, Katana, where they're just like, oh, yeah, by the way, this is Katana. She's pretty badass, right? Do you see how badass she is? She has a sword that holds souls. And I'm like,
exposition in two sentences.
I'm just like, oh, my God, man. Get a little bit more Diablo. It was just, and don't get me started about the twist with Diablo at the end. That was the point of the movie where I was just like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the fact that they basically just gave the movie over to the folks that cut the trailer and said, here, edit the movie. I mean, it very much felt like that.
Yeah.
And so I just, Wonder Woman looks really like,
dude, I'm really stoked on Wonder
cool,
Woman.
But I feel like I've been burned a couple of times from like really great DC trailers. And then a movie that just doesn't satisfy. And I think Gal Gadot was one of the more redeeming things about Batman vs. Superman.
Oh, yeah, she was the best part. I mean, they actually gave her a Greek accent.
Yeah.
Like, I never saw it, because she is from a Greek island of, I can't say the name, Themyscira. And she, every single time she was portrayed in any other, like, format, like the Super Friends show or whatever it was, she just had a regular American accent. No, she's from a Greek isle. She's going to sound Greek. And I thought that was just genius.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the make it or break it for me. I mean, I kind of feel like if that movie sucks, then...
Then you're done?
I'm out. No. I mean, there's only so much money I'm going to spend at Alamo Drafthouse on on beer and food to watch crappy DC movies. It's obviously not the print kind of side of the universe, but I just feel like you know, the Arrowverse is another story, but, I mean, just what they're doing with the cinematic universe, it's just frustrating.
I think the TV shows they're doing are fantastic.
Yeah, and I haven't watched as much of the TV shows, but I've heard good things about what the world that they've been building there.
I've never been a Flash fan in my entire life. I eat up those episodes like it's going out of style.
Yeah, I mean, I read a lot of the DC stuff when I was a kid, and I liked it, and this was the 80s, and so there were some interesting things happening.
Yeah.
In DC in the 80s, and you know, I stopped reading comics for a bit of time, and I came back into it, you know, several years ago, and it's just it's kind of hard to be a DC fan these days.
Well, so you reminded me of, okay, let me start over. You brought up something that was, those movies are really dark, and growing up, the DC universe was the brighter of the big two. Like, you know, with X-Men books, you're dealing with racism. With the Avengers books, you're dealing with, like, you know, government versus, you know, self, which it doesn't make sense when I say it that way. But, you know, during the 80s, they had
there
that whole thing where the government was...
that they were trying to kind of
But the DC
through.
Books was just like Shazam and Aquaman. And you're like, oh, yeah, they're just, they're fighting Starro, you know. And I think that they made a huge misstep with... the movies of just making them, we're going to be dark.
And I think it's dark for the sake of dark. It's not dark because it's dark advances the story.
I mean, when I was watching Batman versus Superman, and I've everybody's listening, I'm very sorry I'm bringing this up again. It just seemed like the guy playing Superman, in his eyes, it was just like, no, Superman's this hopeful, inspiring character, and I just imagine Zack Snyder with, like, a cat of nine tails hitting him like, no, he's dour and sad. And that's not who Superman is.
No. And I think that's, like, the two-thirds of Man of Steel that I liked was because I think, like, there was that optimism and that hopefulness. And
he was saving people.
The first two-thirds of that movie almost felt like a Terrence Malick film, you know, in terms of the visuals. And you know, it's hard to get into it.
It is. I mean, I did see it in the theater, and I had this buddy named Dave who lives in Philly. Hey, Dave. And
hi, Dave.
Not the Dave who lives in Austin. Also, hi, Dave. And at the end of it, he was just like, that was the worst movie I've seen in a long time. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, man. There was explosions and flying around. And then I saw it, like, I bought it for a full price at a Target. And then I watched it again. I was like, oh, yeah, this movie wasn't that great. I still watch it occasionally because I like Lawrence Fishburne. But
yeah, I mean, honestly, who doesn't?
Exactly.
But, I mean, it's like you can't build a movie franchise around Lawrence Fishburne. They've done that once.
Yeah, they did it once. They did it once. I remember back when he was Larry Fishburne in, Friday the 13th. Or, no, it was Nightmare on Elm Street 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And, of course, Apocalypse Now, when he was also Larry Fishburne. I believe he was 14 in that movie.
So this is way off tangent.
No, let's go with tangents, man. Let's do it.
Talking about actors and superhero franchises and their kind of humble beginnings.
Okay, go for it.
So, Don Cheadle.
Yes.
War Machine.
Yes.
Apparently, one of his very earliest roles, I found this, I was cruising through YouTube the other day, was a Golden Girls spinoff called Golden Palace. It ran for like one season.
I'm sorry.
It
continue.
Ran for one season on CBS.
More different types of Golden Girls?
Yeah, I guess Dorothy got married and then all the other gals moved down to Miami Beach and they opened a hotel in South Beach. And Don Cheadle was the front desk manager of this hotel.
I know what I'm doing as soon as I get home.
Yeah,
I'm sure
it's somewhere, but I found the opening credits on YouTube. I don't know how. I was in some article and it linked to it. I think it linked to like Don Cheadle or something, and it was one of those, like, you know, kind of into the rabbit hole things you find on YouTube.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it was totally Don Cheadle, like, very early
Golden
on.
Golden Palace.
Yeah, Golden Palace.
All right.
Golden Palace. It was
a Chinese food restaurant.
An 80s Don Cheadle. He had not the hairstyle that I would associate with Don Cheadle.
Oh man, now I really got to see
this. Yeah, it was interesting.
Don't tell me what it is.
Sorry to go off tangent, man. You start talking about Larry Fishburne, and I'm like,
so okay. Now here's a new, like, we'll get off the angry stuff. So, if you could cast a superhero movie, what would it be, and who would be cast in it?
This is going to be tough. Superhero.
Yeah. Or comic book. It doesn't have to be superhero. It could be a comic book movie that you would cast and who would play in it. Oh, I'm ready for this.
So I kind of... It's already being done. And I haven't even seen the movie, but... So M. Night Shyamalan came out with...
Right.
You know, his new movie this weekend, James McAvoy. Where McAvoy's playing like 25.
Don't spoil anything.
Well, no, I haven't seen the movie yet, so there'll be. I'm going to catch it this week. But he's playing a character with 25 different personalities.
Correct.
And I've heard that he's great in it, and it kind of makes me wonder, like, well, he's done the young Professor X thing.
Oh, if he plays Legion?
If he plays Legion.
Oh, dude, that's a cool idea.
You know, that would I mean, and obviously, like, the Legion show's coming on next month, and Noah Hawley, like, I love his Fargo series he did for FX.
Right, right.
And, you know, I'm sure Legion will be good, but, you know, when
I'm definitely going to give it a shot.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to, too, but when I saw the guy that they cast for David Haller, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I've got, like, a picture in my mind of who he should be.
Right.
And it's like, I don't get it off of him, But I don't know, just like seeing the commercials for the McAvoy movie, and then knowing that like Legion's starting to be developed as a character for a property, it's kind of like more of the missed opportunities. Like what would he do in that role? Because I love the Cy Spurrier Legion book that came out a few years back.
Like X-Men Legacy?
Yeah, X-Men
Legacy.
Dude,
that book was the bomb.
That was great. I mean,
love that,
like,
book.
That was a book
I have
that,
every issue of it.
Yeah, but that was like a book that like they're doing a Legion book? And,
yeah,
you know,
I picked it up like because Mike Del Mundo did the cover art for it. I was like, oh, okay, I'll just check this out, see what it is.
The art was really interesting. Like, you know, like Cy Spurrier, like coming off of some of the Judge Dredd stuff that he had done. It was a really just solid book, I thought.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, I don't know. Legion's one of those things where it's not like the Keanu Reeves Constantine movies where it's kind of like, how would I go back and do this? They haven't even done Legion yet, but I'm already armchair quarterbacking it and being like, well, who would be a better Legion?
Well, Legion, I always feel in the comics, has always been every single time they've used him, except for that X-Men Legacy book, was a missed opportunity.
Yes.
Every single time. Like, even when they used him as the impetus for Apocalypse, you know, Age of Apocalypse series, I was just like, ah, man, but they could have done something cool there, and they really didn't. They just missed it. And I mean, he is totally a product of the late 80s, early 90s, of just like, he's the most powerful one, but he's crazy.
Well, and also that hair.
Oh, man, I love that hair.
Product of the late
80s. I love that hair, and I'm sad that it's not in the show. I really wish that they would just have, in the previews at least, his hair just going everywhere and crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of like a happy medium, but I don't know, like just kind of close-cropped, blonde-haired dude.
Yeah,
doesn't really read to me. But I mean, in terms of like other books, I mean, honestly, there's so many books that are being optioned into the series or movies these days.
And that's
like, what's left?
I think that's a problem because it seems like everybody's writing for a movie or writing for a TV show, and that's not the medium. You know, like, everybody wants that dream, you know? It's kind of like, it really reminds me of the 80s with stand-up comedians. Like, they were all waiting for a TV show because they saw Seinfeld get something, and they were like, oh, we can get a show. And so that's what they always went for, and it sometimes was detrimental to what they were going for, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, in terms of, like, just thinking about some of my favorite books, they're all in development. And so it's like, I'm trying to think, like, what's left. I think, like, Deadly Class, I think, is optioned.
It's been optioned.
You know, there's a number of books that I really like that have been optioned, and it's like, so, you know, what's left at this point?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I don't like about comics is everybody's writing for development as opposed to writing for the story, writing for the sake of being a comic book. And That's one reason I thought the Vision book was so great, because no matter what he does in that book, Paul Bettany is not going to sign up to play the Vision in that.
No.
Nobody's going to make that movie. No. And I'm just like, well, that's why it makes it great, because they will go out on the limb and do this stuff. Whenever somebody's writing something to be optioned, they're too safe.
Yes.
They're playing too safe, and they're trying to play to a different audience than the comic book audience. Man, I just went on a rant there. I'm sorry.
No, you know, it's funny. So we're talking about different books we like and who we cast. So I just started thinking about the Paybacks.
Oh, like, okay.
Who would be interested in that? And one thing that just kind of popped in mind is you were talking just then, is like, I'd like to see Mark Strong just play pompous ass of Night-Night. Yeah.
Oh, dude, Mark Strong would be great.
Yeah,
that would be
because there's so many kind of just larger in life characters in that book. That could be fun.
Okay, so my favorite, absolute favorite thing, and I personally thanked Donnie Cates for this, was in the first issue when the Paybacks are after Night-Night and he leans close to his horse.
Yes.
And he's just like, go run, I don't want them to get you too. And he like walks away and the horse just says, I'll miss you. There is no setup to why the horse was talking.
No.
It just happened. And I laughed my ass off for like 5 minutes after reading that. I thought that was the best thing ever.
I mean, that's almost in the way that like Tim Miller kind of did the Deadpool movie. Like if you did a Payback series and didn't take it very seriously,
and you did something kind of like the Edgar Wright or Tim Miller,
mm-hmm.
like somebody who's a visualist and kind of good at, like, you know, tongue in cheek. It could be an interesting property, you know.
Well, you're bringing up good points. Once again, one of my favorite Marvel movies is the Ant-Man movie. You know why?
So much better than it should have been.
Because it was fun.
Yeah.
It was just a silly heist movie that everybody did a great job in. You could tell every single person that acting in that behind their eyes, they were like, I'm literally enjoying every moment of this.
Well, and the most Edgar Wright part of that, even though he didn't actually finish the film, you could see his fingerprints all over it.
Oh, yeah.
The Fascination Street. Like, where The Cure was, I think it's Fascination Street.
No, it was Disintegration.
Disintegration.
Yeah, it was, oh my God.
Playing
dude.
On the phone, and just, I mean, that was...
When that happened, me and my wife in the theater, like, laughed so hard. We were worried we were going to get kicked out from the Alamo Draft House because we, like, could not contain ourselves. I was just like, no way, really, oh. And, but also, like, the little cameos really got it for me, too. Like, when... Scott Lang first puts on the suit and he's like getting just beat up left and right, and he gets thrown out of the building and he lands on top of that roof. The roof he lands on, the guy in the car played Ant-Man in Saturday Night Live in the 70s.
Oh, wow, I didn't catch that.
Yeah. So, God, I'm going to get crucified for this, for not knowing it. So there was this skit in Saturday Night Live during the late 70s or like the earliest of 80s, where it was all these superheroes meeting up for a dinner party, and it totally crossed genres. It was DC and Marvel, and you know, John Belushi's playing the Hulk, and you know, I think Dan Aykroyd was playing Thor or Superman, and then Ant-Man shows up and they're like, hey, who are you? He's like, I'm Ant-Man. I can shrink down to an ant, but I have the same strength as a man. And everybody just makes fun of him. So that's, I was very happy that he showed up.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I didn't even really catch that.
Yeah, it was just that kind of little stuff that I was just like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, obviously, there were some creative struggles behind the scenes, but I mean, the final product was still really enjoyable.
It was once again, one of my favorites.
It didn't feel like a movie by committee, you know?
Wasn't tied into everything else.
No.
It didn't, you know...
Which is one of the reasons why I liked it.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, this is the thing. And yeah, it alluded to other things, like, oh yeah, the Starks and blah, blah, blah. But it was like, no, this is its own little thing, its own little movie, and, you know...
I mean, he hit Falcon, and that's about as much heavy lifting as it did.
And I think that's why Edgar Wright left, because they wanted to tie it more in.
Ah, okay.
I think that's why. I could be wrong, but I remember reading something at, like, Entertainment Weekly, like, what, 3 years ago, before it came out.
Yeah, I mean, I like the standalone nature of that. It kind of reminded me of, like, the first Iron Man. It was kind of a small story. It wasn't like this big overwrought thing, and it was just kind of a small story told very interestingly, and it's like they had good popcorn kind of moments to it. And I mean, I saw Ant-Man like it, I don't know, like a Tuesday afternoon at 3:00. I mean, I had very diminished expectations for it. I just left work early because I was like, I've kind of had enough of it today. And I went and like just caught a showing on my way home from work, and I've watched it several times since, and I still just really enjoy it.
I've never gotten tired of it.
No.
Okay, so we're going to end this segment on a positive note. We're going to be back in just a moment for round 3. Okay, so pause.